This month, the Chester Beatty Library, which lies at the heart of Dublin Castle, is celebrating April with an exhibition called Experiencing Japan. Evelyn O'Rourke went along to the library to find out what's on display for visitors at this also free exhibition.
The Chester Beatty is a great place to encounter different cultures around the world.
The director of the Chester Beatty Library, Fionnuala Croke, there, speaking about the unique position that the library holds in Dublin City.
It's often the first place that people will encounter different world cultures and religions. And for that reason, the library has become increasingly a very important focus for intercultural dialogue, a very safe place for intercultural learning and debate.
And this month, the library is hosting an exhibition called Experiencing Japan. Ancient scrolls, decorations and trinkets are on display here. And Fionnuala gave me the tour.
We're standing on the bridge in the Chester Beatty Library, and we're looking out on the Dublin, on this green patch, which is said to be the site of the Black Pool that gave its name to Dublin. So we're in an area steeped in history. And if you look to the left, this bare exposed brick is all part of the 18th century building, which was offices down through the centuries. And today, mainly all the services, the offices, the shop and the cafe. And this is the bridge leading over to the purpose-built exhibition galleries, which were built at the end of the 1990s. When the move of the Chester Beatty was happening from Shrewsbury Road, where Chester Beatty had built his own private library, to the present site where we are today.
So visitors will come up these stairs.
The visitors will come
and
up
take a right.
We have two floors of permanent exhibitions, and we're going to go into the first floor gallery, which is called the Arts of the Book. And this morning we're going to go into the East Asian section. And as we walk into the Japanese, you get a sense of really this extraordinary and very sophisticated, very beautiful culture, particularly well known in Japanese art are what are called Nara Ihon, painted books and scrolls. And we're so fortunate because outside of Japan, there are two major collections in the world of these illustrated scrolls and albums. One is a New York Public Library and the second is the Chester Beatty.
As Fionnuala and I stood at the display case, she explained to me that the scrolls are painted reading from right to left. In this case, we were looking at the epic classic Japanese tale of Genji, which has found its way into many anime cartoons and video games today.
The tale of Genji is extremely famous as a story because it was written around 1008.
And the version of the story that's on display in the Chester Beatty is no slouch either, having originally been created in 1688.
It's 54 chapters with a cast of 400. But let's just say it's a story of Genji's amorous escapades. All life is in this story. What's very, very interesting is that we know the 17 calligraphers who wrote out these excerpts, two sections each in 1688. And that's how we can date it so precisely. But we don't know who painted the scenes. Calligraphy was so highly prized and so highly important. And the tale of Genji is to this day regarded as one of the great literary masterpieces of Japanese literature. And it features in manga, it features in PlayStation. It carries on, as you often find with these Japanese tales, they continue to adapt and transition into modern forms. They were made to be handled. So this particular one is about 13 meters long. So what you've read is rolled away. So the past is rolled away. You're focusing on the present, and the next episode in the story is yet to come.
And to illustrate Fionnuala's point about the enduring appeal of Genji, here's a flavour of the soundtrack to the game Genji Days of the Blade, which was created for the game console PlayStation 3. As myself and Fionnuala stood there admiring the 17th century Genji scroll, I got talking with her colleague Jill Uncle, who's curator of Western collections at Chester Beatty. She'd spent the morning ploughing through first century Greek documents, and this constant immersion in ancient scrolls and works from the past, I quickly realised, is all in a day's work for the staff here at Chester Beatty.
This morning I was looking at first century Greek documentary papyri that tells the story of a particular township or region and the various taxes that the local people had to pay.
So you're going through this work and there's names there, people who are defaulters, descriptions of them, going right back to first century.
Absolutely. And because a lot of people had the same name, they'd list their name, their age, and then some sort of distinguishing physical feature. So like if there was a scar above the right eye, or if there's a, they had black hair or brown eyes, because everybody's name was the same, because everyone was the son of the son of the son. So it was a way of sort of distinguishing who was who in one family.
No avoiding taxes.
No. Definitely not in ancient Rome are you avoiding taxes.
During the tour of this exhibition, I got even more curious about the man behind the name Chester Beatty. So I asked Fionnuala Croke to tell me more about him and to explain how we in Ireland ended up procuring his collection.
Chester Beatty was born in New York in 1875 to a well-to-do family. His father was a stockbroker, but he studied mining engineering. And as soon as he graduated, in what would be true Beatty fashion, he was always quite, let's say, impetuous. He acted quickly. He travelled west, bought a train ticket to Colorado, and set off on his own with a letter of introduction in his pocket, thinking he was going to get a great job in the mines there. And of course, when he arrived, there was no job waiting, so he had to take whatever work he could get. Of course, he moved very quickly from being a labourer to a foreman, from being a supervisor to a mine owner. He became a mining engineer to the Guggenheims, which is really what allowed him to build up his first fortune. And he set up his own consultancy in New York in the early years of the 20th century.
Chester Beatty became a very successful businessman, but eventually moved to the UK because that was the heart of the action in the mining world. He'd many happy years living in Britain until he had a falling out with the authorities there. So he decided to join his son, who was living in Ireland, and he moved lock, stock and barrel here, where he was greeted with open arms.
Typical Beatty fashion again at the age of 75. He up stakes and moved with his collection, with his publisher, with his librarian to Dublin in 1950. He bought a house on Aylesbury Road and he bought a site around the corner on Shrewsbury Road, where he built his own private library. And on his death in 1968, he bequeathed the collection of that private library to the Irish nation. Thank God, as we sit here today and enjoy this collection, which is just wonderful.
Evelyn O'Rourke reporting there on Experiencing Japan, which runs at the Chester Beatty Library in Dublin until the end of April. There's a series of free events and talks on offer to visitors. More information can be found on cbl.ie.